Today on the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 223, swimming with flippers, tips on getting faster on the bike, running off the bike, and special needs and gear bags. Today's episode is brought to you by How to Swim Faster in 30 Days, a freestyle guide to dropping time in the pool or open water. This multimedia training plan includes 42 instructional swim lesson videos and demonstrations above and below the water, plus a detailed 30-day calendar designed to help you swim faster and more efficiently than ever before. Go to endurancehour.com/swimfaster25 for 25% off your plan today. Each order comes with a $47 off discount code to blue70.com. Full details on endurancehour.com/swimfaster25. If you like your question featured on the podcast, send us an email to endurancehour@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail from your desktop, laptop, or smartphone at speakpipe.com/endurancehour. That's speakpipe.com/endurancehour.
Amber writes, "Hey, Wendy and Dave, your advice and podcasts have been incredibly helpful. I've been plugging away with the swimming and I've done 3 outdoor triathlons. My swimming is schizophrenic." Her question is, if I swim with flippers more often than not, will this be a bad thing? Will it hurt me as I try to progress and get better? Thank you. Hey, Amber, that is just a great question. First, I'd like to start with saying congratulations on entering the sport of triathlon. I hope those races were very successful for you. And when you say, is it a bad thing? It just depends on how you're defining good or bad. In any case, I think using fins can be a very valuable and a good thing in swimming, especially as you're starting to learn the drills. You put on a pair of fins, it's going to help bring your legs to the surface of the water. You're going to be able to focus more on the mechanics of the stroke rather than the propulsive forces that the upper body mechanics provide for you. And you can use your kick to propel yourself as you're really trying to dial in the three main phases of the stroke: recovery, hand entry, underwater catch, and pull. But you also want to wean yourself off the fins, and as you kind of dial in those mechanics, you want to start propelling yourself with your upper body and not use your legs. I'm an upper body swimmer. I don't kick even without a wetsuit, and if you're doing open water swim triathlons in a wetsuit, you're not going to kick. So you don't want to rely on your kick while you're racing. You want to rely on your upper body strength. One reason I think swimming with fins is a good thing is it allows you to loosen up your legs in the water, get some recovery in your legs, get some blood pumping to your legs because you've just swam or biked. But again, as you progress as a swimmer, I think using some fins in the warm up and cool down and then trying to wean yourself off of them for the main set of your swim workout is going to help progress you and advance you as a swimmer in learning how to propel yourself with your upper body than without using the fins. I know some people put on some fins and don't kick, but they just like to have them to help them keep their legs on the surface of the water. And again, to answer that question, if you're struggling with your legs sinking, you need to work on your body balance, your hand entry, and trying to keep the weight of your body on your front quadrant rather than on your lower quadrant. So hopefully that answers your question. I appreciate you asking, and I hope you continue to string together more good days in the water than bad days.
If you're new to triathlon, you're welcome to download for free our Sprint Triathlon Training Plan for Beginners. It's a professionally produced and guided 8-week multimedia training program, which includes welcome videos before every training week, weekly swim workout videos, detailed swim, bike, and run workouts, target heart rate, training zone guidelines, nutrition and hydration tips, race day training tips, and more. Go to endurancehour.com/freesprint to download it today.
This question is from Melissa. "Hey, Wendy, I've really been struggling on the bike this past season, and I want to go into next season a lot more efficient and a lot more stronger. So can you give me some tips on how I can get faster on the bike?" Hey, Melissa, thanks for asking that question. I understand your struggles as biking. Although it's my favorite event in the sport of triathlon, it's my weaker event relative to my competitors. So I do have a few tips about getting faster on the bike. Number one, making sure you get a proper bike fit. Even if you got a bike fit a year or two or more ago, you need a new one. Our bodies change, our flexibility changes, things happen. And so I think it's important to get a bike fit at least every 2 years. Even if you're on that same bike, you should definitely get it readjusted. Sometimes while you're riding, your saddle could move fore or aft. It can move up or down. Your cleat position can change. Things could have happened that you didn't know about until you go to a bike fit expert to kind of point that stuff out to you. So that's really important. That's the first step in becoming more efficient and faster on your bike. The second step, like any sport, is focusing on some skills and drills, making sure you do like one-legged drills and cadence drills, high-intensity drills, low-intensity drills, best done indoors on a trainer to keep consistent and not have to worry about any terrain or weather getting in your way, and making sure that left leg strength and right leg strength are balanced out, and you can be able to tell that as you're doing the drills on the trainer. Number three, if you don't already have one, training with power, I think, is a very good way to determine the workload that you're doing on your bike. Again, I'm a fan of training with rate of perceived effort and heart rate and power at the same time. But if you are one of those people struggling and you've never trained with a power meter, I think that's a good investment. After you invest in a good bike fit, invest in a power meter. They range from anywhere between $800 and $2,000. So you can definitely find a new or used one out there on the market. And if you are going to train by power, make sure you know how to do it. Either do the research yourself or make sure you have a coach that understands how to coach you training with power. The fourth thing, again, putting this all together, is doing the training. Doing a baseline fitness test, such as a 20 to 30 minute, what's called a functional threshold power test with your power meter. If you don't have a power meter, you can still do it with heart rate. And making sure you have a training plan that's set up with your training zones in mind, meaning you're doing the proper endurance technique, tempo, threshold, speed workouts at your current fitness ability based on that baseline test. Putting that all together, you should be able to structure a successful training plan and definitely show rapid improvements going into next season. And if you, again, want to start this now, a great thing to do maybe as you're going into this fall season is just to do a bike-focused training plan without the mix of swimming or running, and just focus on your cycling and kind of bring up your weakness, bring it back up to your strengths. Again, thanks for asking the question and good luck with your season.
You're invited to join the T2 Endurance Club group on Facebook. It's dedicated to discussing all things endurance sports with an emphasis on community and support. Every week, Coach Wendy and I will join the conversation with additional advice and feedback, plus special health and fitness challenges. Just search T2 Endurance Club on Facebook and request to join.
Erica asks, "Hey Wendy, I've done a few duathlons and I've managed the run, first run, and cruise the bike, but the second run kills me. Do you have any training recommendations for the second run? Any recommendations on duathlon training plans? Thanks, Erica." That is a great question. I think the best training for a duathlon is making sure you get in your bricks, meaning you do weekly bike runs and maybe bi-weekly or every third week run bike runs. In your case, because you're struggling with the second run off the bike, it's really important to do, you know, in your training, running off the bike. There's a few ways you can do this. There's three different brick workouts that I recommend. One is just your general endurance brick, where you're going to go for an hour or two bike ride at your, you know, aerobic, maybe tempo intensity. Then you're going to get off and run 1 to 3 miles, maybe up to, you know, depending on how long the duathlon is. If it's a sprint, I would start with 1 mile and build up to running 3 miles off the bike first. And then I would build up to running 1 to 3 miles off the bike at race specific intensity. So the second type of brick workout I would do is, it's a good indoor trainer workout where you do set up your trainer, you do a warm up on the bike, and then maybe you do a 10 minute effort at race pace, get off and run a half mile to a mile, get back on, recover, then do another 10 minute effort on your bike at race pace, get off and run another half mile to a mile, quicker, maybe this time at race pace, and then maybe repeat that one or two more times. So you're really primarily working on your race pace effort on the bike and the run, and you're really getting your legs used to running fast off the bike. The third brick I would do, I kind of alluded to it in the first brick, is where I would do a shorter ride, maybe an hour, or maybe the distance and of your sprint, 12 miles, and I would do the first half easy, the second half at race pace, and then I'd get off and run a mile or two hard, and then I would do a mile or two cool down. So you're extending the length of your brick workout. Being a duathlete, I think it's also still important to do run first and then get on the bike second. Do you need to do the whole length of the duathlon in your training? It just depends how long your training is. If you're training for a sprint distance duathlon, I think it'd be totally fine to do some sprint distances of, you know, the bike and the run in your training. You don't always have to do it at race pace. Save the race pace. Do a little bit of that in training and then do it in racing, reset your zones, learn from each experience, decide what's working, what's not working, reevaluate your training plan, revise it if necessary so you can continue to progress. As far as duathlon training plans go, I've only coached duathletes. I don't have a general duathlon training program available, and there are, you know, duathlon training plans. If you just Google them, you'll find some. It's just a matter of choosing one that fits your life schedule. You want to make sure training fits around your life. You don't need to fit life around your training. And again, it just depends on what distance duathlon you're training for. Best wishes for success. Good luck with your next race. Keep us posted on how it's going. And I'd love to hear more from you if you decide to incorporate more brick workouts into your plan and you race. Let's see how it goes.
In addition to PDF downloads, Endurance Hour training plans are now available on Training Peaks. Go to endurancehour.com for more details.
John asks, "Hey, Wendy, I'm doing my first Ironman next month, and I just read the athlete guidebook, and there's something about there about special needs bags and gear bags. Can you help me out about what I'm supposed to do with these?" Hey, John, what a great question. I did my first Ironman 20 years ago, and I don't even believe that there were athlete guides back then. It wasn't even a World Triathlon Corporation event. It was just the Ironman in Kona. It was probably one of very few Ironmans around the world. And I remember getting to the race and race week, I was so confused. No one had ever told me about any of that, any of these bags. And thankfully, I ran into my friend Laura, and she told me she put in Fig Newtons and pretzels because that's what she likes to eat on the bike, and that's not served on the course. So of course I did what she did. I put in Fig Newtons and pretzels in my special needs bag. I got it at mile about 60 on the bike, and I was so glad to be eating real food instead of bars and gels. It was just delicious. And I didn't have any GI upset. Another thing I did was I had my first goo at mile 2 of the marathon. So that's a whole new story in itself. But anyway, special needs are just that. They are bags that athletes use to put in mostly nutritional products that they used in training that are not offered on the course. I thankfully use all my nutrition on the course, whatever's offered. Every now and then I used to put in a peanut butter, a honey sandwich on whole wheat bread, and I'd get that in my special needs bag. And then I found that that was really hard to chew and swallow and digest, so I stopped doing that. My most recent Ironman I did in April, I actually put pretzels in my special needs bag, and they were really, really delicious, so I'm really happy that I did that. But for the most part, I don't use special needs bags anymore. In the past, I even went as far as putting bike tools, extra tubes, extra CO2 cartridges in the special needs bags. And again, I don't do that anymore because you don't get anything back. I think in the past, you used to be able to get those bags back. With regards to your run and bike gear bag, that's pretty outlined in the athlete guidebook. But the run gear bag, I usually have my running shoes, a pair of socks, my racing bib on my racing belt, sometimes some gels that I want to have in on my body while I'm running. And that's about it for that. And then my bike gear bag is my cycling shoes, my helmet, a pair of socks, my racing bib belt, if you need to wear a belt on both the bike and the run, my glasses. And that's pretty much it. I'm pretty minimalist. I always think, okay, what am I forgetting? But if you just go through your training and what do you use in training on the run and what do you use on training on the bike, that's going to be your bike and run gear bags. And again, for an Ironman event, you actually check those gear bags in the day before the race along with your bike. So again, review that athlete guidebook cover to cover. And I also recommend going to the athlete meeting when you get down to the venue. You're going to hear everything that you just read in the athlete guidebook, but it's just reassurance that you didn't miss anything and you're as most prepared as you can be. Again, thanks for asking the question. I think it was a great one for the newbie Ironman, and it was fun to share my experience with you.
And that wraps up episode 223 of the Endurance Hour podcast. Thanks so much for everyone who submitted questions. If you like your questions submitted on the program, send us an email to endurancehour@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail from your desktop, laptop, or smartphone at speakpipe.com/endurancehour. Until next time, for Wendy Mader, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you next time. Adios.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.